Chapter 5. Summer should be spent. Gray interludes of economy and brilliant reactions of expense. Such was the setting of Lily Bart's first memories. Ruling the turbulent element called home was the vigorous and determined figure of a mother still young enough to dance her ball dresses to rags, while the hazy outline of a neutral-tinted father filled an intermediate space between the butler and the man who came to wind the clocks. Even to the eyes of infancy, Mrs. Hudson Bartlett appeared young, but Lily could not recall the time when her father had not been bald and slightly stooping, with streaks of gray in his hair and a tired walk. It was a shock to her to learn afterward that he was but 2 years older than her mother. Lily seldom saw her father by daylight. All day he was hometown, and in winter it was long after nightfall when she heard his fagged step on the stairs and his hand on the schoolroom door. He would kiss her in silence and ask one or two questions of the nurse or the governess. Then Mrs. Bart's maid would come to remind him that he was dining out, and he would hurry away with a nod to Lily. In summer, when he joined them for a Sunday at Newport or Southampton, he was even more effaced and silent than in winter. It seemed to tire him to rest, and he would sit for hours staring at the sea line from a quiet corner of the veranda, while the clatter of his wife's existence went on unheeded a few feet off. Generally, however, Mrs. Bart and Lily went to Europe for the summer, and before the steamer was halfway over, Mr. Bart had dipped below the horizon. Sometimes his daughter heard him denounced for having neglected to forward Mrs. Bart's remittances, but for the most part he was never mentioned or thought of till his patient stooping figure presented itself on the New York dock as a buffer between the magnitude of his wife's luggage and the restrictions of the American custom house. In this desultory yet agitated fashion, life went on through Lily's teens. A zigzag broken course down which the family craft glided on a rapid current of amusement, tugged at by the underflow of a perpetual need, the need of more money. Lily could not recall the time when there had been money enough, and in some vague way her father seemed always to blame for the deficiency. It could certainly not be the fault of Mrs. Bart, who was spoken of by her friends as a wonderful manager. Mrs. Bart was famous for the unlimited effect she produced on limited means, and to the lady and her acquaintances there was something heroic in living, as though one were much richer than one's bankbook denoted. Lily was naturally proud of her mother's aptitude in this line. As he had been brought up in the faith that, whatever it cost, one must have a good cook, and be what Mrs. Bart called decently dressed. Mrs. Bart's worst reproach to her husband, and was to ask him if he expected her to hive like a pig, and his replying in the negative was always regarded as a justification for cabling to Paris for an extra dress or two, and telephoning to the jeweler that he might, after all, send home the turquoise bracelet which Mrs. Bart had looked at that morning. Lily knew people who lived like pigs, and their appearance and surroundings justified her mother's repugnance to that form of existence. They were mostly cousins, who inhabited dingy houses with engravings from Cole's Voyage of Life on the drawing room walls, and slatternly parlor maids who said, "LL go and see to visitors calling at an hour when all right-minded persons are conventionally if not actually out." The disgusting part of it was that many of these cousins were rich, so that Lily imbibed the idea that if people lived like pigs it was from choice, and through the lack of any proper standard of conduct. This gave her a sense of reflected superiority, and she did not need Mrs. Bart's comments on the family frumps and misers to foster her naturally lively taste for splendor. Lily was 19 when circumstances caused her to revise her view of the universe. The previous year she had made a dazzling debut fringed by a heavy thunder cloud of bills. The light of the debut still lingered on the horizon, but the cloud had thickened, and suddenly it broke. The suddenness added to the horror, and there were still times when Lily relived with painful vividness every detail of the day on which the blow fell. She and her mother had been seated at the luncheon table, over the chaufroix and cold salmon of the previous night's dinner. It was one of Mrs. Bart's few economies to consume in private the expensive remnants of her hospitality. Lily was feeling the pleasant languor which is youth's penalty for dancing till dawn, but her mother, in spite of a few lines about the mouth, and under the yellow waves on her temples, was as alert, determined, and high in color as if she had risen from an untroubled sleep. In the center of the table, between the melting marrons, glaces, and candied cherries, a pyramid of American beauties lifted their vigorous stems. They held their heads as high as Mrs. Bart, but their rose color had turned to a dissipated purple, and Lily's sense of fitness was disturbed by their reappearance on the luncheon table. "I really think, Mother," she said reproachfully, "we might afford a few fresh flowers for luncheon." "Just some jonquils or lilies of the valley," Mrs. Bart stared. Her own fastidiousness had its eye fixed on the world, and she did not care how the luncheon table looked when there was no one present at it but the family. But she smiled at her daughter's innocence. "Lilies of the valley," she said calmly, "cost $2 a dozen at this season." Lily was not impressed. She knew very little of the value of money. "It would not take more than 6 dozen to fill that bowl," she argued. "6 dozen what?" asked her father's voice in the doorway. The two women looked up in surprise. Though it was a Saturday, the sight of Mr. Bart at luncheon was an unwonted one. But neither his wife nor his daughter was sufficiently interested to ask an explanation. Mr. Bart dropped into a chair and sat gazing absently at the fragment of jellied salmon which the butler had placed before him. "I was only saying," Lily began, "that I hate to see faded flowers at luncheon, and Mother says a bunch of lilies of the valley would not cost more than $12. Mayn't I tell the florist to send a few every day?" She leaned confidently toward her father. He seldom refused her anything, and Mrs. Bart had taught her to plead with him when her own entreaties failed. Mr. Bart sat motionless, his gaze still fixed on the salmon, and his lower jaw dropped. He looked even paler than usual, and his thin hair lay in untidy streaks on his forehead. Suddenly he looked at his daughter and laughed. The laugh was so strange that Lily colored under it. She disliked being ridiculed, and her father seemed to see something ridiculous in the request. Perhaps he thought it foolish that she should trouble him about such a trifle. $12, $12 a day for flowers? Oh, certainly, my dear, give him an order for 1200. He continued to laugh. Mrs. Bart gave him a quick glance. "You needn't wait, Polwarth, I will ring for you," she said to the butler. The butler withdrew with an air of silent disapproval, leaving the remains of the chaffroids on the sideboard. "What is the matter, Hudson? Are you ill?" said Mrs. Bart severely. As he had no tolerance for scenes which were not of her own making, and it was odious to her that her husband should make a show of himself before the servants. "Are you ill?" she repeated. "Ill? No, I'm ruined," he said. Lily made a frightened sound, and Mrs. Bart rose to her feet. "Ruined," she cried. But controlling herself instantly, she turned a calm face to Lily. "Shut the pantry door," she said. Lily obeyed, and when she turned back into the room, her father was sitting with both elbows on the table, the plate of salmon between them, and his head bowed on his hands. Mrs. Bart stood over him with a white face which made her hair unnaturally yellow. She looked at Lily as the latter approached. Her look was terrible, but her voice was modulated to a ghastly cheerfulness. "Your father is not well, he doesn't know what he is saying. It is nothing, but you had better go upstairs. And don't talk to the servants," she added. Lily obeyed. She always obeyed when her mother spoke in that voice. As he had not been deceived by Mrs. Bart's words. She knew at once that they were ruined. In the dark hours which followed, that awful fact overshadowed even her father's slow and difficult dying. To his wife he no longer counted. He had become extinct when he ceased to fulfill his purpose, and she sat at his side with the provisional air of a traveler who waits for a belated train to start. Lily's feelings were softer. She pitied him in a frightened, ineffectual way. but the fact that he was for the most part unconscious, and that his attention, when she stole into the room, drifted away from her after a moment, made him even more of a stranger than in the nursery days, when he had never come home till after dark. She seemed always to have seen him through a blur first of sleepiness, then of distance and indifference, and now the fog had thickened till he was almost indistinguishable. If she could have performed any little services for him, or have exchanged with him a few of those affecting words which an extensive perusal of fiction had led her to connect with such occasions, the filial instinct might have stirred in her, but her pity, finding no active expression, remained in a state of spectatorship, overshadowed by her mother's grim unflagging resentment. Every look and act of Mrs. Bart's seemed to say, "Colin, you are sorry for him now, but you will feel differently when you see what he has done to us." It was a relief to Lily when her father died. Then a long winter set in. There was a little money left, but to Mrs. Bart it seemed worse than nothing, the mere mockery of what she was entitled to. What was the use of living if one had to live like a pig? She sank into a kind of furious apathy, a state of inner anger against fate. Her faculty for aneging deserted her, or she no longer took sufficient pride in it to exert it. It was well enough to anage when by so doing one could keep one's own carriage, but when one's best contrivance did not conceal the fact that one had to go on foot, the effort was no longer worth making. Lily and her mother wandered from place to place, now paying long visits to relations whose housekeeping Mrs. Bart criticized, and who deplored the fact that she let Lily breakfast in bed, when the girl had no prospects before her, and now vegetating in cheap continental refuges, where Mrs. Bart held herself fiercely aloof from the frugal tea tables of her companions in misfortune. She was especially careful to avoid her old friends and the scenes of her former successes. To be poor seemed to her such a confession of failure that it amounted to disgrace, and she detected a note of condescension in the friendliest advances. Only one thought consoled her, and that was the contemplation of Lily's beauty. She studied it with a kind of passion, as though it were some weapon he had slowly fashioned for her vengeance. It was the last asset in their fortunes, the nucleus around which their life was to be rebuilt. She watched it jealously, as though it were her own property and Lily its mere custodian, and she tried to instill into the latter a sense of the responsibility that such a charge involved. She followed in imagination the career of other beauties, pointing out to her daughter what might be achieved through such a gift, and dwelling on the awful warning of those who, in spite of it, had failed to get what they wanted. To Mrs. Bart, only stupidity could explain the lamentable denouement of some of her examples. She was not above the inconsistency of charging fate, rather than herself, with her own misfortunes. But she inveighed so acrimoniously against love matches that Lily would have fancied her own marriage had been of that nature, had not Mrs. Bart frequently assured her that he had been knocked into it by whom, she never made clear. Lily was duly impressed by the magnitude of her opportunities. The dinginess of her present life threw into enchanting relief the existence to which she felt herself entitled. To a less illuminated intelligence, Mrs. Bart's counsels might have been dangerous, but Lily understood that beauty is only the raw material of conquest, and that to convert it into success other arts are required. She knew that to betray any sense of superiority was a subtler form of the stupidity her mother denounced, and it did not take her long to learn that a beauty needs more tact than the possessor of an average set of features. Her ambitions were not as crude as Mrs. Bart's. It had been among that lady's grievances that her husband in the early days, before he was too tired, had wasted his evenings in what she vaguely described as eating poetry, and among the effects packed off to auction after his death were a score or two of dingy volumes which had struggled for existence among the boots and medicine bottles of his dressing room shelves. There was in Lily a vein of sentiment, perhaps transmitted from this source, which gave an idealizing touch to her most prosaic purposes. She liked to think of her beauty as a power for good, as giving her the opportunity to attain a position where she should make her influence felt in the vague diffusion of refinement and good taste. She was fond of pictures and flowers, and of sentimental fiction, and she could not help thinking that the possession of such tastes ennobled her desire for worldly advantages. She would not indeed have cared to marry a man who was merely rich. She was secretly ashamed of her mother's crude passion for money. Lily's preference would have been for an English nobleman with political ambitions and vast estates, or, for second choice, an Italian prince with a castle in the Apennines, and an hereditary office in the Vatican. Lost causes had a romantic charm for her, and she liked to picture herself as standing aloof from the vulgar press of the Quirinal, and sacrificing her pleasure to the claims of an immemorial tradition. How long ago, and how far off it all seemed. Those ambitions were hardly more futile and childish than the earlier ones which had centered about the possession of a French-jointed doll with real hair. Was it only 10 years since he had wavered in imagination between the English Earl and the Italian prince? Relentlessly her mind traveled on over the dreary interval. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.